Hi, everybody. My name is Pelle. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, we're getting ready for the last session.
Run away with
so
it.
So what's going to happen now is that Chris and Doug, who have been entertaining us and enlightening us all weekend.
Entertaining, I thought it was
it. Entertainment
and
enlightenment.
It was a workshop. Yeah. Like the clowns from America.
And we're going to do about an hour on 12 obnoxious. And then go over to some Q&A. So... since we had a basket during the break over there. We got a couple of questions there. But we also have the mic. So if you have any questions,
yes.
Just don't worry. You get your chance to ask the guys your question.
Yeah.
So you get going.
It's, you know, it's small enough. It's small enough to where you don't even need a mic. Just I'm loud. He's louder than me.
I can get loud.
He can get loud. So I want to show you two things. We are now at step 12, and Chris is absolutely phenomenal at this. He's gonna show you how to start meetings as he did me. I've opened up three meetings. I'm 2 for 3. One did not make it. It did not fail because things don't fail, right? It just did not make it. People were not interested in the message that that I was delivering, so that's fine. But the other two are just flourishing, and I took this from Chris, and he's got a meeting in New Jersey that, you know, sometimes as a speaker, and I think Chris may agree with me, I get kind of exhausted because people can only tap into my energy so much before because I need to tap into energy too. Now my energy is God, but I need human tapping, if you will. Where I could tap into somebody's energy. And I think that's why I didn't make it through the airlines very well, because you'd walk into this crew room and before your flight, and you'd debrief your whole flight crew, and it was just full of hate. Hate, 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 negative, negative, negative. And I'd get on the airplane, I'd be like, you know, I'd pass out up front by sleeping. I'd do the twitching and the drooling And so flying asleep is not a good thing, but hopefully the co-pilot was awake. I don't know. I was sleeping. But there's some things. Welcome, Miss Canada. They're always late in Canada. there's a few things that are in the big book that I would like to point out. I would like to point out the word permanent sobriety. Number one, they talk about recovered in this book. They never use the word, except for one time in a third person, the word recovering. It was recovered. Now, we talked about that. There's a difference between cured and recovered. Remember we talked about that, those two things? Cured means the disease no longer exists, nor the symptoms. Recovered means the disease does exist, the symptoms are gone. You want the disease to kick it up a notch, just add alcohol and drugs, and shoop. You're off to the races. And as we all know, it doesn't get better. It always gets worse. Now, I haven't experienced that. So when I'm sponsoring guys that are chronic relapsers that feel like total losers, and they feel like, I look at them straight in the eye, I said, you are going to make a better sponsor than I will ever make. And they sit back and they look at me, they're like, well, how am I going to do that? I'm like, because I have never, I can't sit here right now and say, I know how you feel. I have no idea on how you feel. I have no idea. I've never relapsed, ever. I've come in here once, and that was it. And they now, see, I take their thinking, it's all about the thinking, and I turn it, and they're like, I see this hope. And they're like, so I'm going to be better than you? I said, absolutely. Because you could feel the pain that this person has. I have no idea the pain that you're going through. I had about 4 years of sobriety, and I was dying to feel out what that pain was. And I actually went to my sponsor. I said, I'm going to go out and I'm going to relapse because I want to check it out. And he looked at me, he goes, does that sound very smart to you? But I got to feel this. I got to feel, you know. He says, no, I'll tell you, it sucks. How about if we just leave it at that? So in the book, it talks about permanent sobriety. So if it does truly state permanent sobriety, wouldn't you know what it is that's keeping everybody permanently sober? I will tell you. It says here on chapter 7, working with others. This book is great, right? Working with others, so it tells you how to work with others, I guess. And then there's another chapter called How It Works. You know, I talk to people in AA 5 years, how it works? I don't know how it works. There's a chapter called How It Works. How do you miss it? They read it every time. Do you all read How It Works in the meetings here before? I don't know how it works. How about if we read the book? Okay, so the first time it says here, practical experience. Every time you see something in the big book, they're always going to talk about experience, their experience, which is great. This theorizing, I speak at universities, I speak to economic classes, I speak to business classes. And most of the teachers that ask me to speak at these universities are just geniuses, but they've never owned a company in their life, ever. They've never experienced owning a company. They never experienced putting $1 million on the line and just rolling the dice to see if it works. They've never experienced it. But man, they can make an Excel spreadsheet and they can make a business plan and they're the best. But they've never had the practical experience. Now, on the other hand, I don't have the education as business. I'm an aerospace engineer by education. But I have experience at the yin-yang when it comes to business. Okay? So both of us together, it really works. But I work off of all practical experience. Okay? If it doesn't work for me, it ain't happening. I'm not going to do it. So everything that I've talked to you today is all experience. It has nothing to do with theory. It all has to do with experience. And this is my experience. Practical experience shows that nothing, the word nothing I think means nothing, that nothing will so much ensure immunity. Does everybody, if you're immune to something, does everybody understand what that means in English language? That means you can't get it. You're immune to it. Nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Intensive work. That means on Saturdays when I'm totally exhausted and I just want some downtime, I know from 10 to 2 there's going to be a drunk at my house and I'm going to bring him through the steps. And every Saturday I say the same thing at 9 o'clock. Oh, I would pay big money to be by my... The door knocks. I'm like... Come on in, right? Because they know the Doug Muir drunk farm opens up at 10. Plus, I think they really like the cooking that my wife does at 12. You know, like, they go over to Doug's house. If you have nothing to eat in your house, his wife will cook. Just pay attention for a couple hours, and he'll rant and rave about this big book stuff. So we get visitors at our house all the time, and I get calls in the middle of the night, and I get all that great stuff. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. If you turn to page XVII now, XVII, it'll state this. It says, XVII, this seemed to prove, first thing they did, as you're talking about Dr. Bob and Bill meet. Bill, a Dr. Bob, could not get sober. He was a great church-going man. He knew so much about religion, but he could not get sober. He had all this guilt inside because he thinks he hosed all of Akron, Ohio, which is a very small town. And he had all this guilt, and he couldn't get sober. Really, our birthday, AA's birthday, should be Mother's Day, which I think is the first week of May. Yeah, I think it's the first week of May, because that's when they met. Well, actually, they met the day after Mother's Day, because Dr. Bob was underneath the table. He was drunk, and Bill Wilson wanted to see him, so he couldn't see him then. And then the next day, he came, and that's when they met. But what happened was, on June 9th, well, June 8th and 9th, Dr. Bob went to Atlantic City in New Jersey to a conference and got drunk. And they poured him on a train and sent him back to Akron, Ohio. And Bill Wilson was still in Akron, Ohio. They pulled him off the train. On June 10th is when Dr. Bob went and did his operation. He had an operation he had to do. And he didn't come home. And everyone's like, here we go again. He's back out. But what happened was he went all around Akron and he made amends, made all of his amends. And that's why our date is June 10th, because he didn't drink after that. And I believe that. I believe it comes back to the amends, folks. Make everyone complete it, get it done, make it happen. Today's the day. Now's the time. I mean, that is my famous saying. So let's just get it over with. Sometimes you're just going to have to hold your breath and you're going to have to go do it and just get it done. All right? It states here then, it says, this seemed to prove, when these two met and Dr. Bob didn't drink again, this seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery, was vital to permanent recovery. Permanent, forever. That means getting on a plane in Florida, flying to Newark, getting on a plane from Newark, flying to Denmark, taking a nap, coming here, right, and having Pally get me up on stage for 14 and a half hours a day. Strenuous work, one alcoholic with another. Okay, doing Saturdays. It's all it has to do with helping others. So if you're not giving this away, if you're not sharing this with others, you are so missing the icing on the cake, as we call it. That is the icing on the cake. That is the joy of my life, to see a shaking man at my door in total despair, losing licenses around the United States, to be a unbelievable, productive person. I see that time and time and time and time and time and time again. So if you are missing that because you're afraid you might hurt somebody, I am here to tell you, you are not that powerful. You cannot kill somebody by sponsoring them. Don't give them the verbal sponsorship. Give them this. I mean, you could read, can't you? Give them this. Heck, I even put it in forms for you. Now you really can't kill them. Just read, okay? Get your own experience with these steps and share it with others. Does this make sense? 500 people are shaking their head.
So they're all saying yes. What's that one?
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to hand this over to Chris, and he's really, he is definitely my sponsor when it comes to meetings and organization and getting people together in the masses.
Certainly, it's important to us if you're one of those real alcoholics out there. Certainly, it's important for you to keep carrying the message. Something just happened, like in the last hour, that I'd like to share about, because it's so. It just there's things that happen in my life today, and I call them God shots. And what it is I think that they're things that are a little bit beyond coincidence that pop into my life every once in a while. And I believe it's God letting me know I'm heading in the right direction. I mean, I think all of you have had those things. They're coincidences. Like this, wow, I can't believe that happened. Like, you're 100 miles away from home and you're thinking about drinking. All of a sudden, somebody from your AA group will pop up. I mean, things like that happen to us all the time. Well, a number of years back, I was sponsoring a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who were narcotics addicts. They also had alcohol problems, but they were mainly narcotics addicts. And what I believe in the 12 steps is, step one, you need to find your own truth. We talked about that in step one. Well, in step 12, I believe that you need to work with people that have the same problem that you have. I'm not the AA police. If you're here, you know, I have zero problems with you being here. I just ask that when it comes time to sponsor or guide someone through the process, please have the same problems that they have so that they can relate to you. It is one alcoholic working with another. That's one of the things that makes Alcoholics Anonymous work. We can help when no one else can. Now, if you're a narcotics addict and you're trying to sponsor an alcoholic, there's going to be a disconnect. What happened was I was able to take some of these guys through the steps, but I told them that your main problem is narcotics. Your main problems are drugs. So I want you to work with other drug addicts. So they went to another fellowship, another major fellowship in our area that didn't really allow the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous to be used. It was against their primary purpose, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing. But these individuals were very hungry to work with other people, and they kind of got short-circuited there when they tried to start some of these meetings, and they were told that they were not following traditions, and they were not going to be considered part of that fellowship anymore. So the thought comes to a couple of us that we would start a different fellowship, a fellowship for narcotics addicts that could use the book Alcoholics Anonymous as a recovery tool. And the thought was that we would use the name A&A. Well, these guys basically started an A&A meeting. Alcoholics Narcotics Anonymous is what it was known as. And that was all well. You know, these meetings grew very quickly. We found that there was a number of drug addicts out there that were hungry for the message of recovery from the Big Book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, again, we need to be very clear about what our problem is. But the step process has never been laid out better in any literature anywhere than in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So, so they started A&A, and A&A started to grow. I think it got up to about 10 meetings. And someone heard about it over in Iceland. And I don't really remember how that was, but I got a chance to send some of my sponsees who'd been instrumental in starting A&A over to Iceland to carry the message. Now, I didn't hear much after that. That was several years ago now. But I'm standing in the back of the meeting, and I just mentioned A&A, and someone 4 feet away says, "Oh yeah, I'm going through the steps from A&A." I'm like, "What?" It was just an amazing coincidence. It's made it to Copenhagen. You know what I mean? Through via Iceland, obviously. But the way I kind of describe it is, you take a rock and you throw it into a pond, and the ripples will move out. Like this. Well, when we help an alcoholic or we help somebody else with an addictive illness, and we do it in a strong fundamental way, a way that really helps them achieve recovery, we don't know where those ripples are going to go. We don't know how far or how many people are going to be helped by that very simple message or by that little amount of time that we spent. Now, my own personal experience is when I got sober, I had a sponsor who was an oral tradition sponsor, and he really couldn't offer me the recovery process out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous because he didn't know it. He hadn't experienced it himself. He certainly stayed sober and did lots and lots of service. And you know what? Intensive work with other alcoholics, the best intensive work with other alcoholics is to take them through the steps. But there's other intensive work with alcoholics, and this guy just got involved in service and meetings, service and meetings, service and meetings. And he stayed sober for 10 years that way. And that's kind of the way he was trying to offer me sobriety. Service meetings, service meetings, service meetings. And I did that. I did that for, I don't know, about a year. But it wasn't fulfilling that inner need that I had, the God-shaped hole that we're all born with. I believe our alcoholism is our yearnings. We always want to fill ourselves with something from the outside to make us feel whole. We've got to earn more money to feel whole. We've got to have more sex to feel whole. We've got to have this. We've got to do this. If I could only get that Mercedes, if I could only start going out with her, if I could get rid of him. I mean, it's all of these things that we think we need to use. You know, food. We'll use food. We'll gamble. There's some GA guys in here. You know, if only I could hit the trifecta. You know, I mean, we're going after these things outside ourselves to fill a need inside of us that can only be filled by God. It's a God-shaped hole. We try to fill it with all this other stuff, but it doesn't work. It doesn't fill that hole, and we remain empty. It might make us feel okay for a while. Like if we're having sex while we're eating a steak, we may be okay for that 10 minutes. But, you know, after the steak's gone and you're done, you know, with the sex, you're back to you again. I'm back to me. And that's never good enough for us alcoholics or drug addicts. We need to experience the oneness of God to be okay. And we'll try everything but that. Anything but that, we'll try it. And there's a lot of unhappy people in the world, but the most unhappy, I believe, are the alcoholics who are really, really, they have this yearning that just can't be fulfilled, and they're trying to fulfill it. You know, here's the thing. They call alcohol spirits. You go to the spirit shop, and spirits is from the Latin derivation or whatever is spiritus. which is like the grace of God or something. Now, this is what they call alcohol. They call alcohol like it's short for the grace of God, spiritus. Now why would they be naming alcohol that? It's because that's what we're looking for in the bottle. We're looking for a connection with God. We're looking for peace of mind. We're looking for, you know, you're into like the third drink and you go like, ah, you remember that? You remember that? Ah, and then it's a little bit after that, but it's that ah that we're looking for. Now, we need that. We're searching for that. And when we get sober, we don't have that. And we're going, you know, we're really unhappy. I mean, there's nobody more unhappy than the newcomer, you know? Like moping around, always complaining about everything, you know? You wouldn't believe my boss! Oh! You know, and you go to the meetings, you go to some of the closed-minded discussion meetings in the New Jersey area where anybody's allowed to share anything. It's a discussion meeting. And you just, and they go, oh, you wouldn't believe I drank my wife, my job, my car, you know? And they're trying to share their way sober. They're trying to share their way into some kind of spiritual condition. And you know what? They share their way right out the door around me. You know, if you continue to just wallow in the problem like a pig in mud, you're never going to get anywhere. Now, the best form of intensive work with other alcoholics is to carry the message that will lead the alcoholic to the fulfillment of that yearning that we have to be whole with God and the universe and our fellow man. Now, I never knew this. You don't understand what the steps are going to do for you before you get involved in them. You know, you look at the steps on the wall when you walk into your first meeting, and you're like, kind of academic, kind of, you know, that looks like second grade spirituality to me. That's not going to work for me. I mean, you just don't know. And you don't know what kind of gifts are going to come through working a program of recovery until you work them. I didn't know I had an unquenchable yearning. I just knew I was always uncomfortable and I was looking for something to make me comfortable. What the hell will make me comfortable? I don't know, but I'm looking for it, you know, and I looked for it in drugs and alcohol, and I'd mix this drug with this alcohol to hopefully get the feeling that I had when I was 12 and I first got high. I mean, you know, I'm looking for this relief from the bondage of me. And you know, here I am. I'm working the steps. I'm working the steps for a number of reasons, none of them the right reasons. But I don't think reasons matter when it comes to working the steps. I think motives are almost immaterial. As long as you do the work, you're going to get the results. And if you're doing the steps just to be cool, because it's now cool to do the steps, then do it for that. If you're doing it because you can't seem to recover from alcoholism, do it for that reason. Whatever reason you do it, get from one side of the steps to the other. However you can do that, because it will get you to peace of mind. Now, in the chapter Working with Others, I highly recommend people using the chapter Working with Others as a tool to sponsor people. When I first came into AA, it was all about getting them to go to meetings. You gotta go to a lot of meetings. I'll pick you up at your house. I'll do this. I was sharing on the 12th step at a convention in New Jersey years ago, and they didn't know who they had mistakenly asked to share during this Alcathon, because it was people that weren't really involved in the big book, and they didn't really want to hear me much. But anyway, I had 20 minutes to share on step 12, and then we turned it over to this, you know, raising of hands and discussion. I spent 10 minutes on going from step 1 to 11, and then I spent 10 minutes on carrying the message of step 1 to 11 to an alcoholic, which is very appropriate. It's what this book is asking us to do. And I shared this from my own experience. I was the least obnoxious as I can be. And someone took exception to my newfangled way of working a program. It was this old guy, and he had a bunch of his little sponsees. It was like a big duck with the little ducks. You know, he had all those little sponsees like around him. Like, can I get you coffee? You know, let me hold your chair. And it was one of these deals, and he's like, and he sits down, and he listens to me. And a couple people share. One of them is my wife. Well, thanks for sharing, Chris. I got a lot, blah, blah, blah. And then he raises his hand. Here's what he says something like this. I don't know what the hell you were talking about up there. You sounded like a counselor or something to me. I don't know about any steps or stuff like that. What the hell you think you're talking about this stuff? But what we do is we get the drunk and we throw him in the car and we take him to a meeting. And we love him until they can love themselves. I don't know about all these other steps of you were talking about. Now, I took exception to that. He had also insulted my wife while he was sharing. So I let him finish, you know. And I said, his name was Stan or something. Stan, thank you very much for sharing. Interesting. We were both talking about working with other alcoholics and, you know, sponsorship and stuff like that. And it's kind of interesting that there's actually a chapter in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that speaks to that. It's called Working with Others. And it's interesting that nowhere in that chapter does it say throw them in a car or love them until they can love themselves. And he freaks out. He gets up, he starts throwing chairs and kicking over tables. I mean, I have never seen this in my life, but the meeting stopped. The chairman goes, meeting's over, meeting's over. People are heading, blowing for the exits, you know. This guy's freaking out. And I'm sitting there up at the table like, you know. Now, I'm not, you know, I didn't mean to go after the guy. I mean, well, actually, I did mean to go after the guy, but I feel very passionate about the carrying of this message. The 12 steps says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. It doesn't say having had a spiritual awakening from making a whole bunch of coffee and driving people to meetings. It says having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So, I don't believe you can have a spiritual awakening as a result of steps that you haven't taken. I just don't believe that that's possible. Now, a lot of us have spiritual experiences in AA. We get revelations and we get these wows, you know, and stuff like that, and they're all good. But the spiritual awakening that they're talking about in the 12 steps comes as a result of doing the steps. And if you haven't done the steps, you haven't had the spiritual awakening. That's all there is to it. If you haven't had the spiritual awakening, it's very difficult to carry the spiritual awakening to other people. Because it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. What message? Well, the message of, I went through these steps and I had a spiritual awakening. That's the message we're supposed to carry. Now, there's two ways that you can help an alcoholic. You can carry them to the message, which is what a lot of 12-step work is. It's important work. I do not denigrate any type of 12-step work. There's literature committees. There's making coffee. There's setup. There's all kinds of stuff that's absolutely necessary for the carrying of the message. It makes the carrying of the message possible, and it's important work. It's 12-step work, but it's important work. But the 12-step work that they talk about in the chapter Working with Others is carrying the message to the alcoholic. Not carrying the alcoholic to the message, carrying the message to the alcoholic. Okay? So, if you have had a spiritual awakening, it's incumbent upon you, you feel motivated to share this. It would be like discovering the cure for cancer and saying, wow, I got a cure for cancer. I'm going to keep this to myself. You're just not going to do that. You've found the answer, not only to your alcoholism, but to that yearning that you've always had, that you've been, you know, eating and drinking and, you know, spending, trying to be happy. You found how to be happy. You found how to have peace of mind. You now want to share it. You want to share it from the rooftops. I'll tell you, with a lot of the people I take through the steps, there's an issue that happens right afterward. You know what that issue is? They go running into AA meetings telling everybody they've been doing it wrong all these years. I just found the message. All you people have been lying to me all these years, you morons. And they cause a lot of trouble. Why didn't you tell me? I could have died. You know, this is how they go back into these meetings. And I counsel them to, you know, be cool about this stuff. I say things like, okay, you think nobody has been telling you the message. Do they read how it works in your meeting? Yeah. How much did you pay attention to that then? Well, not a lot. I go, leave these people alone. carry the message of your experience. Don't go back and beat them up because they've been doing it wrong. Good God, yeah, they've been doing it wrong, but you don't have to shame them. Why don't you go back? Why don't you go back and be an example of a recovered alcoholic in your group? Do what you're supposed to be doing. Grab some newcomers, start taking them through the steps. Be an example in your group. This is what happened to me. I got exposed to the steps in an area no one was working the steps. This is 1990, 91, and you know, the only thing you ever used your big book for was for hiding money from an alcoholic, because you knew they'd never open it. That's the way it was in our area. Now, I go through the steps and, you know, my eyes are now opened, and all of a sudden I start sharing all this stuff. Now, everyone liked me in AA up to this point, everyone, because I gave good share. You know what I mean? You know how to give good share? You give good share by saying things that are funny and interesting, but without anything that would ever offend anybody or bother anybody. You want to make sure that the most amount of people in the room like you, and you give good share. And, you know, you have to be a little bit self-humiliating, you know, and you got to talk a little bit about how stupid you were this week. And, you know, that'll make people like you more. And I had all this stuff. So I gave good share. So everyone liked me. All of a sudden, I started talking about the experiences from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what happened? What's with Chris? What's going on with him? Did you hear him at the meeting the other day? He was talking about actually making amends. Now, I lost a lot. All these people came to our wedding. You know what I mean? And one by one, we've pretty much lost all of them. I mean, we've gotten 10 times the amount of friends back in other areas with people that are in the fellowship of the Spirit. But at that period of time, you know, people really backed away from us. Now, I was bringing people over to my house to go through the book, like Doug was doing. And it started with the people who wanted me to sponsor. They'd say, hey, would you be my sponsor? And I'd say, sure, come on over to my house and we'll start with the book. And I'd take people through the book. And wherever it would say to do something, we would do it. And, you know, they'd come back with inventory, the whole thing. Now, they started saying, listen, can I bring a friend of mine? I know you don't sponsor him, but he's interested in what we're doing here. Bring him over. Well, it went from one or two people at my house to about 12 or 15. Now, a lot of people are starting to go through the steps. And the amazing thing is the people that went through the steps with me all continued very, very strong in Alcoholics Anonymous. There were strong voices in AA. They worked with other people. They stayed sober. Their lives got better. So they started to be heard in other meetings. Now, one of the guys that I took through this, they funneled the losers toward me. You know, listen, nobody is a loser in AA, but the people they thought were losers, they funneled to me. The people that kept relapsing. Now, what they misunderstood in these meetings is these people were more powerless than most of the people in the meetings. Yeah, they were drinking. They were drinking because there was no answer in your group. You were sharing about what happened today. You were sharing about Aunt Fanny and Uncle Fudd and their visit over to your house. Oh, Aunt Fanny and Uncle Fudd came over. Oh, they pushed all my buttons. Oh, you know, I had all my issues came up and I had to start using my boundaries. Yeah, they're drinking. They're supposed to be drinking if they're listening to crap like that. So they started sending people to me. Now, I started taking them through the steps. Now, this one guy was sponsoring somebody, and the guy kept drinking on him. So he said, you know, he heard that this guy Chris was getting some results. So he shoves this guy my way. He says, you mind taking so-and-so through the steps? I'm not doing really much with him. So I took this guy through the steps. He ended up having like 93 amends when we finally got to his amends, and he made 91 of his 93 amends, and he was a changed person. This awakens your spirit when you go out and you set things right in the universe. When you balance the scales of the universe, your spirit is awakened. You know, so many people are in AA, asleep, dreaming, they're awake. They're asleep, dreaming, they're awake. Well, you get through the steps and all of a sudden your spirit is awakened and you go, oh my God, I was asleep. Well, I've been trying to tell you that for 3 years, you know? But so all of a sudden this guy like wakes up and he's a completely different person. And his sponsor comes to me and he goes, would you do with me whatever the hell you did with him? And I said, sure. And I took, this guy had like 14 years, but he had 14 years of never having a good job, never getting his license back for a DWI, terrible relationships with women, you know, still touring with the dead, and you know, wondering why his life is, you know, terrible apartments, you know, just, you know, nothing is going on with this guy. And he goes through the steps with me, and within a year, he's got a good job, he's got his license back, he got engaged and married, he bought a house, you know, and his priest goes up and goes, what the hell happened to you? And he goes, well, I went through the steps with this guy named Chris. He goes, where can I find this guy? This is a priest. Well, he's speaking up in Netcong. Well, I give a talk up in this town called Netcong, and afterward, this priest comes up to me and he goes, I want to introduce myself. My name is Father Fred, and I'm really interested in what you're doing. I want you to do it at my church. I'll give you any room in my church any night of the week. You don't have to pay any money. I want whatever you're doing in your house, I want it to be part of the mission of my church. And I go. Now, by this time, I have an awakened spirit. So I know that when things like this are happening, it's a divine plan and I best not interfere with it. I best not stick my nose into it. But there was an issue. Up until this time, there were three types of meetings in New Jersey. There was step meetings, there was discussion meetings, and there were speaker meetings. There was no meetings called Chris Teaching Out of the Big Book. There was no Chris Teaching Out of the Big Book meetings in New Jersey. So this is not, you know, this is going to be tough. So I open up this Big Book meeting in this guy's church, and mostly my sponsees came, but there was about 16 people there the first night, and I start teaching out of the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, telling you how you actually take these steps and encouraging you to take these steps by talking from my own experience. Now, the meeting had its ups and downs for the first couple of years. All of a sudden, a young people's group discovers it. This young people's group with about 20 or 30 people discover it, and they start coming there. All of a sudden, the meeting goes from about 20 people to about 50, and we've got to move upstairs. Now it's getting really big and people are coming from all over. People are driving 100 miles to actually hear the message, you know, and they're coming to Burnsville, and nobody from Burnsville is going to this meeting. Cause you got to remember, I was like Tomaine Charlie or something, you know, stay away from him. It might be catching. But people who were hungry for the message, who were hungry, they had that spiritual crying out for fulfillment, because, you know, they know that there's more to AA than just staying sober. There's more in AA. There's got to be more in AA. Started looking around and they started heading for Burnsville. Now, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary December 1st for the Burnsville Home Group. This group has influenced a lot of groups in the area. Not only in the area, but there's meetings that have followed what we do, that have based on what we do, that they've started to do that in other states. And there's probably 20 or 30 meetings that use our format and actually teach out of the book. Now, in the there's a pamphlet called More About Alcoholism. In that pamphlet, it says the sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it says in this pamphlet. Bill Wilson wrote the pamphlet. So we take that seriously in our group. The sole purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the steps. That's what we do in Burnsville. And people think that we've got this newfangled cult type of AA. It's not. It's going back to the basics. It's going back to the first decade AA. If you want to learn something about Christianity, go back and study first decade Christianity, first century Christianity. If you want to learn something about Buddhism, go back to the earliest texts available on Buddhism. If you want to learn anything, go back to the origins of that movement and study what they were doing. Study what worked. Study why it became a big movement. Why did Alcoholics Anonymous go from 2 people to 2 million? There's got to be a reason. There's got to be a success story in there somewhere. Find out what it is. The success story happened up until about 1950-55. Was this really the success story of Alcoholics Anonymous? We've grown since then almost by mistake, because it's the message has become watered down so much. But the real amazing part of Alcoholics Anonymous happened in the first couple of decades when they really had it right. They really had the spiritual process right. And we've really tried to get back to those basics. Now, in this book, it talks about approaching the alcoholic. And it basically says in here that your prospect, that's somebody you haven't landed yet to go through the steps. Your protege, that's somebody who's gone through the steps with you. It says when you found a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out as much as you can about him. This is going to be a sales job. It's funny. You're going to sell someone on the idea of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then you're going to back away because now it's a take it or leave it. You've got the information now that I've sold you on the ideas of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you can take it or you can leave it. If you want to follow the program, great. If not, here's my card. See you later. I never worked that way in AA in my early days. It was all about trying to convince somebody to come to meetings. This is about trying to convince somebody of their alcoholism. If you can convince somebody of their alcoholism, you've won the battle. If you can convince them of the recovery process. On the first visit to the individual, you leave them this book and you ask them to read this book. When you go back, you talk a little bit about yourself, you talk a little bit about the first three steps, and then you ask them, are you willing to go to any lengths? Any lengths, they already know what any lengths is because they've read this book. So often today, we'll go up to the newcomer and we'll go, are you ready to get sober? Are you willing to go to any lengths? They don't know what any lengths are. You know, you could be asking them to be your lover or something. They don't know what any lengths is. They're a little bit worried, actually, you know? So at least when you have them read this book, if they can read, if they can't read, then you read it to them. But if they can read this, now they know what any lengths looks like. Now when you're asking them that question, it's going to be meaningful to them. You know, are you willing to go through with this process? Now, another thing you hear a lot in AA is, you take what you want, you leave the rest. You know, if you go into an operation, can you go up to the doctor and say, I'll have a little bit of this, but don't give me any of that. No, you need the whole process. But you need the whole operation for something to work, right? You would never edit a doctor's operation. Don't bother sewing that pancreas up when you're done, doc. I mean, you wouldn't even think about that. So a take it or leave it AA program is the same way. You're throwing the dice the same way. Our program is suggested as a way of overcoming alcoholism. So either accept the whole program or don't accept anything. All right. We've become very tolerant in Alcoholics Anonymous. We allow you now to come into AA and sit in the back and languish in the back, just suffering your ass off year after year after year, never holding you accountable to going through a recovery process. And it's really sad. I don't do that. If you ask me to sponsor you, I'm going to have some requirements. You need to do what I did. If you want what I got, you need to do what I did. What really worked for me was going through this process in this book. And you know what? If you're not willing to do that, fine. I can't work with you because I am not going to be your drama coach. So many people want a drama coach, don't they? You know, hey, can I call you like every single night and, you know, drag you down into the pathetic depths of hell of my life, you know, and have you wallow around down there with me? Because if I share my burden, I'll only have half of it to take back home. Or whatever they say, right? Have you ever heard that? No, I don't want half your burden. Not interested. And you know what? If you call me up and start using me as a drama coach, click. You're going to hear a dial tone really fast. Sorry, not interested. You know, did you do the exercise that I gave you last week? No, I haven't had time for that. But you wouldn't believe how a click. You know what I mean? I told you to call me back after you did the exercise. What part of that didn't you understand? Well, I thought I'd just check in with you. I don't want you to check in with me. I don't need 50. I've sponsored 50 people. If y'all checked in with me, I'd be in trouble. And if I had to give each one of you a half an hour on the phone every night, you know, they'd have to add more hours in the day. I can't do that. I don't have time for that. What I want to do is I want to show you the solution so that you don't have to wallow around in the problem for the rest of your life. You know, what I've become a little bit unpopular in my area because can you imagine? Because in a discussion meeting, you know, we also have a discussion meeting as part of my home group. And when somebody comes in and complains and then they come in and complain again, we go up to them and we go, sounds like you need a sponsor. Oh, no, I've got a sponsor. Well, it can't be a good one if you're still coming around AA complaining about crap. I'll tell you what, we've got some people who will take you through the steps. You don't have to fire your sponsor. Just go through the steps with one of our people here. One of two things is going to happen. They're going to become uncomfortable with our meeting and go share their crap down the street, which is fine with me. Or they're going to get a hold of a sponsor from that group and work and find the solution. And then they're going to come back and they're going to share their solution. Because one thing I tell my guys is, listen, bring the problem into the recovery process. I'll help you work the steps on any problems. Bring the solution to the meeting. Because the people in the meetings are going to get more from your solution to your problem than from hearing about your problem. You know what I'm saying?
I never got clapped.
All 800 people gave a standing ovation to that. Then they done.
I never got clapped. I'll say it again. What's up?
So oh, listen, you know, I'm going to get off the soapbox a little because Doug's got his own soapbox. But I'll tell you this. Listen, read the chapter Working with Others and try some of these things in here. Don't have contempt prior to investigation. Oh, I don't want to do that. That'll make me hardcore. Listen, be hardcore. Try being hardcore. If the person gets through the steps, you are going to be creating the fellowship you crave. You're going to have a host of friends that you're going to have for life. You're going to be close. These people will walk into a burning fire with you. They will jump in front of a bullet for you, these people that you help get through the steps. You want to have a crew? I'm from New Jersey, and the Sopranos are big in New Jersey. You know, everybody's got a crew. You want to have a crew?
Forget about it.
Take some people through the steps.
You know, I was one of the people calling up Chris, and I was just totally bitching about the AA in Florida. I mean, I was just it was killing me. It literally was killing me. And then finally he says, well, why don't you just design what you would like to have? And so he gave me what he started in Bernardsville, and there's a huge meeting now in Sarasota, Florida, which is on the west coast, the Gulf Coast. The one there's one in Charlottesville, Virginia, and there was one in on the island that I'm at now, which actually didn't make it, but that's fine too. So. If you definitely can design what you crave when it comes to the AA, because I know that if you're anything like us, it just absolutely drives you crazy that these people are saying, take your time 1 week a month, and they're killing more people than smallpox. And it breaks my heart when I hear that. And then I feel like it's my opportunity to raise my hand and discuss it. Now, as the years go on, I discuss it a lot less threatening than I did when I first got the spiritual experience after a year, and I would tell you why you relapsed, because you didn't work the steps the way I was telling you how to work the steps, and I wonder why no one wanted me to sponsor them, you know? Like I told you before, my sponsor just said, because you're an asshole. And I was. And there was no doubt about it. I was in your face. It didn't work. And now I believe that everyone's on their own path. But if you want to go on this alcoholic path with me, and you want to have the freedom from alcoholism and have the icing on the cake, which means you could do anything in your life that you want and not be afraid of anything. And this book discusses it in this chapter right here. There's a few things I'm going to read, and then we're going to go to question and answer. It says, it tells you how to sponsor somebody. Show him from your own experience. That means if you have not worked the steps, you have no experience with the steps, leave people alone. I say that to you. Leave them alone. What are you going to share with them? Your problems? Think about that. I'll read it again. It says, show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drinks prevents normal function of all willpower. The next thing it talks about is faith. People who just don't drink go to church. For a real alcoholic, that does not work. I've seen it work once with a guy, but for a real alcoholic of the depth of my kind, I needed a solution that had weight and depth, and those are called the 12 steps. It says here, he may be an example of the truth that faith only is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice. That's the 12th step. And unselfish, constructive action, which is steps 4 through 9. Unselfish, constructive action, steps 4 through 9. Okay, the faith does not work by just not drinking, going to church. I tried it, and I was atheist, and it didn't work. Which, how crazy is that? The next thing I'd like to read to you here is, it says that helping others is the foundation stone. A foundation stone is what we're all sitting on right now. This thing better be pretty solid, or else we're all going to fall through, right? So it says, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. If you're not helping others, you're missing it. It says here that a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day. And this is the thing that I live for. But remember this. This is what I'm about ready to read. I got caught with my pants down on this one. What I'm about ready to read is on page 100 and 101. That means you have 30 Roman numeral pages and 100 pages before you get to here. Okay? Because I had a sponsee who did this and didn't make it. Assuming you are spiritually fit. He didn't hear that part when I read this. Assuming you are spiritually fit. We could do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. When I came into AA, I was suffering enough that I would lock the doors. I literally turned the locks in my children's bedroom around. And I'd lock them in so I wouldn't harm them. And then I'd forget about them. It was absolutely a terrible thing. They were 2 and 3 years old. I would close the drapes. I would take the phone off the hook. All right? So I was in prison already. Why would I want to go to AA and be in prison again if I can't even walk down the freaking beer aisle or go to a bar to have a dinner with friends? I mean, I'm not going to sign up. Assuming you were spiritually fit, though, it says you could do all sorts of things. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. I've heard that. We must not have it in our homes. I do. We must shun friends who drink. I do not. We must avoid moving pictures or show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. I own the largest one in Charlottesville, Virginia. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. The first 100 people who wrote this book, it says, our experience shows that this is not necessarily true. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind, there is something wrong with their spiritual condition. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a freedom that I could not have imagined if I took pen to paper and someone said to me, write out the most fantastic life that you could ever imagine and then pull it out of this box 13 years later. I wouldn't even have come close. I would have wrote one line, get rid of the hole in my body. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to get rid of that hole. This Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a freedom. Stop living in fear. No more fear. If I've taught you one thing or explained to you one thing, there is no more fear. That fear is gone. Live in Alcoholics Anonymous. Preach the truth, which the truth is the book, and then watch them grow. Watch these people grow in spirituality that you have never experienced in any church that you will go to, ever. You know, I went to, I'm Catholic, and I went to Catholic school until they asked me to leave, and they didn't like my sense of humor too much. And my father-in-law is the brain surgeon in Rome, Italy, and very popular. And his partner is the Vatican's doctor. And mama, papa call the church that I go to the happy church. Oh, you're going to the happy church. You know, like an AA meeting. I'm like, we got mean churches here too if you want to go. There's a Catholic church right down the street. And so I went to the Vatican for the Pope's funeral. And it was the first time I was there. And it was the most sad thing that I've ever experienced in my entire life. And I thought if the main man in the Catholic Church is called Jesus, saw this, he would just be totally amazed. People were kneeling to other people. People were kissing each other's rings. It was just totally, totally something that I did not experience, and I would rather not experience that again. Organized religions has its place. Some people go back into organized religion, and they do a lot of great stuff. I believe that. But I believe where I came from with you all in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have never, ever heard an argument on religion, ever, ever. Not since I've been here, not since I've been in the rooms. I've been in for a few 24 hours. And so that's what I love about this. You all didn't throw it down my throat. I was able to learn my own religion. Now, when I go back to the Catholic Church with my sisters, because they still go, I just find it totally beautiful and wonderful. I sit there and I pray and meditate as they're doing all this, you know, dogma stuff, and I just like being in that atmosphere because I believe that all religions are just, they're this close to being the same, this close, but humans just blow it away. So there's no more fear of alcohol here. There shouldn't be. If you do have a problem of walking down the beer aisle, you need to look at your situation and your spiritual conditioning because that's what it's really all about. To end it up is that... if you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friend know that you are not to change their habits on your account and find out what your motives are. Always find out what your motives are. Just don't go into the bar because you want to steal a little bit of excitement. You know, I do a lot of meetings. I may go to New York City and do a lot of meetings, or San Francisco. I fly all over the place, and people like to take me out. You know, sometimes when I don't drink, they look at me and they're like, you don't drink? Why? They'll ask the question. And I just politely say, well, you know, in 1970, lampshades and dancing on bars went out. So I said, I don't want to drink anymore. So I make a joke out of it, and we pass it on. You know, they never press me for it. If they press me for it, I just say, it's none of your business. I'd rather not drink. I like staying in shape. I like staying alive. All right. Now, what we have here is we have the question and answers, if you would. You got a box right here, and then we're going to end it up.
Okay.
Unless someone wants to raise their hand. Does anybody have a question right now?
Is there a roving microphone somewhere? Or
can you just talk loud?
Here we go.
All the big books are coming out. Oh, my God. They're going to start asking big book questions. You just want to raise a hand, and Pally will give you the...
It doesn't have to be a question. It can be sharing. It could be anything you like.
Give me the basket.
Sure.
No questions? Oh, that's sweet. When will we be back? That is the question.
We were hoping for extravagant praise.
Well, Pally's going to have to answer on that one. I think you're changing your whole meeting system here, aren't you?
What we'll do now is is sit together on the committee and discuss the future of this convention. We'll have a new convention. If it'll be here in this building, we don't know, but there will be another convention. And if it will be Doug and Chris, I don't know, but they will be just as good as Doug and Chris. If that's possible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's possible.
There's a question in
some,
the back.
Some tall boots to fill.
There's a question in the back, Doug.
Okay.